So we're very pleased to have Josh Bartok here to give us our first talk of the Angha.
I particularly appreciated the intro that this talk, that this koan is one of the ones that is most inspirational to me in my everyday life. I think this will become clearer in a moment. Case 9 of the Gateless Barrier. A monk asked the priest Qingzheng of Hishan, the Buddha of supremely pervading, surpassing wisdom, did zazen on the Bodhi seat for 10 kalpas, but the Dharma of the Buddha did not manifest itself, and he could not attain Buddhahood. Why was this? Qingzheng said, your question is exactly the point. The monk said, I'm sorry, I think you may not have understood me. He did zazen on the Bodhi seat. Why couldn't he attain Buddhahood? Qingzheng said, because he is a non-attained Buddha. And I really do love this koan. Sitting as a non-attained Buddha, this is a practice I can get behind. Sitting in the precise manner that a non-attained Buddha would, which turns out to actually be the way I sit, is a practice that I can really get behind. In a certain way, none of us ever comes to Dharma practice looking for the right thing for the right reason. All of us come to it because we're so sure something is not quite right. Something urgently needs fixing. We want some transcendent insight, some great, pervading, never-failing peace of mind, some feeling of connecting to our deepest, compassionate nature, that other people can just bask in our benevolent glows. We come to it looking for escape. And this practice, this path, is about something very real. In a gigantically important way, this practice is not nothing. But it's not what we think it is. It's not what we may have initially started out chasing. This practice releases us into this life of ourself and the universe together, into this life not of just joy or just pain, but of joy and pain, into this existence not of just life or just death, but of life and death, into this life not just of self, but of self and universe, arising together. In an important way, this practice is not about you. It's not about anything you personally get. It's not about what's going on inside the content of your mind. We sit not to get anything, but we sit to honor the very truth that from the beginning nothing is missing. Honoring, entrusting ourselves deeply into the reality of just this is it. Just this non-attained Buddha. Just this. Just this body-mind universe. Just this past history of karma and causes and conditions. Just this whole big mess is it. We sit on the Bodhi seat. We sit on the seat of enlightenment. This koan speaks of the Buddha of supremely pervading, surpassing wisdom. And Master Lin Chi, also known as Master Rinzai, clarifies who this particular guy is, this Buddha of supremely pervading, surpassing wisdom. Master Lin Chi says, supremely pervading refers to the one who personally penetrates everywhere into the 10,000 dharmas, which have no nature and no form. He personally penetrates everywhere into the 10,000 dharmas, into the entire universe, into the universe of phenomena, which have no nature and no form. Master Rinzai goes on, surpassing wisdom refers to the one who has no doubts anywhere and does not attain a single thing. Buddha is the one whose clear light shines throughout the Dharma world. And what if even with this lofty discretion, these lofty phrases personally pervading everywhere, into all the forms which have no nature and no form. What if this is the practice of a non-attained Buddha? What if this is the practice of us sitting upright and unmoving in the midst of the universe unfolding? Exactly as it is. And I invite all of you right now to personally penetrate everywhere into the 10,000 dharmas. You think I'm kidding? Surpassing wisdom refers to the one who has no doubts anywhere and does not attain a single thing. Let's appreciate that. No doubts anywhere. And so what about when we have doubts? Doubts too are included. The Song of the Grassroots Hermitage says, a Mahayana Bodhisattva trusts without doubt. And this without doubt includes all of the arisings of doubt. Doubts too are just the 10,000 dharmas, just phenomena, just arisings arising. Without doubts means we meet phenomena just as phenomena. And does not attain a single thing. And also important to note that this Buddha of supremely pervading, surpassing wisdom sat on the Bodhi seat for 10 kalpas. A kalpa is a gigantic aeon unit of measurement. There are many poetic images of how long a kalpa is. My favorite one is that there's a mountain of iron a mile on a side. And once every 10 years, a single sparrow comes by holding a single strand of silk in its beak. And it brushes the silk across the tip of the mountain. The time it takes that sparrow to wear down that mountain, that's a kalpa. And this Buddha sat for 10 of those. And what an expression of patience, What an expression of commitment. What an expression of honoring the reality of things as they are. 10 kalpas. And as though any of you who may have had a difficult period of zazen at some point in your life, or who may have sat a second morning of sesshin ever, you can affirm for yourselves that, as the Faith and Mind Sutra says, one instant is 10,000 years. One instant is 10 kalpas. This moment is 10 kalpas. And 10 kalpas is infinitely longer than that. I love that the monk here, brings this sincere question. Hey, I've read about this guy. I read about this guy, the Buddha, and he actually, he did everything that you said we're supposed to do. And he didn't get it. The Dharma of the Buddha did not become any more manifest. And he could not attain anything at all. What's up with that? And the master here says, "Oh, so beautifully expressed. Thank you for that." Answering fully and completely. But the monk soldiers on. thank you. Thanks for saying that. But he sat zazen on the Bodhi seat. I sit zazen on the Bodhi seat. Why couldn't he attain Buddhahood? Why couldn't he attain Buddhahood? And we sit with this question ourselves, sit here on each of our Bodhi seats, wrestling with the question of why is it not going better for me? Why am I not any more enlightened? Where is my big kensho? Where is my samadhi that is a complete escape? Why, when I get up, am I still me? Why, despite all of my insights, despite all of my effort, despite all of that, is there still sickness, old age, death, loss, change, fear, joy? Why can't I get any better? Why can't I stop being me in the Dharma? And the master here answers, because even right now, with this body, this mind, the karma that you have, the upbringing that you have, the parents that you have or had, the day that you had today, the difficulties, the feelings and certainties of not enoughness, even with that, right now, you are fully embodying a non-attained Buddha. You are, and this Buddha, this non-attained Buddha, is a Buddha. And we want to tell ourselves that obviously we'd prefer to be an attained Buddha. That sounds like a much better deal. Where can I get me some of that? But what if we entrust ourselves to this life of the non-attained Buddha? What if we entrust ourselves fully in this moment, right here on the Bodhi seat, to this Buddha life? This Buddha life that isn't ours, but it's what we share and partake in. It is the universe's life unfolding even now. This practice of meeting ourselves as a non-attained Buddha, this practice of meeting ourselves as a grieving Buddha, this practice of meeting ourselves as a fearful Buddha, this practice of meeting ourselves as a grasping Buddha and entrusting ourselves to those lives, that Buddha life, that's this practice. I'm reminded of a joke from the comedian Stephen Wright, who says, "You can't have everything. Where would you put it?" And so, not attaining anything, where would you put even one iota of more enoughness than is already present, of more thusness than is already arising? Stephen Wright has another joke. He says, "I have a really, I have an extensive seashell collection. I keep it spread out on beaches all over the world." Maybe you've seen it. And so what if that seashells collection is yours? What if this light that pervades everywhere, what if this is ours? What if we can entrust ourselves to just this, not needing any more to have? And in the presence, and this enoughness isn't a feeling. It isn't a feeling that cancels out feelings of inadequacy. It includes even that. Meeting those feelings of inadequacy, of doubt. Meeting those just as precious seashells. So tonight, I encourage each of you to sit for 10 kalpas on the Bodhi seat. And I encourage each of you to really entrust yourself to this non-attained Buddha that truly does pervade everywhere.
So please make yourselves comfortable. We're going to have our Dharma dialogue now. And this is a time to ask questions or make comments. Could be about the talk, about the koan, or about your particular brand of non-attainment, whatever you'd like to ask about or mention.
That koan always breaks my heart. You know, just the image of the monk is that, you know, the monk is me. You know, it's I often find myself wondering why it is that I practice and I'm still me. And I'm not sure exactly who I want, who I see myself becoming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, practice includes the arising of certainty that we're still me. regarding your breaking heart. You know, as James Ford reminds us, if you're lucky, your heart will break. The broken heart lets it all in.
And such a beautiful koan for the beginning of the Anga, you know, the patience and the commitment and, you know, sitting on the Bodhi seat for Kalpas. Feels like that after the first day. And I so loved your talking about not having doubt, including doubt. Just really rung true to me all of a sudden, like, yeah. Course, you know, but so easy to you know, make those separations, you know, that everyone else is certain and I'm filled with doubt, and there's something missing here, and I'll just sit and then the doubt will go away, but it doesn't. And so thanks for just like opening the frame a lot, mm-hmm. you know, so that it all can be included. So thank you very much.
And I appreciate your pointing to how certain we are. I mean, that obviously they're all sitting is not a tough one. I mean, you can just tell. Look at that. Wow. But me, I'm just a jerk.
I keep waking up.
Thank you.
I enjoyed your talk, and it kind of provided an answer to a question I asked, I think, 2 weeks ago, where I was kind of struggling with, what do you do when, like, how do you reconcile acceptance of things as they are versus changing a situation that you're in that isn't working for you, and kind of reconciling that, and I think that, you know, still kind of figuring that out. This I too enjoyed putting the hard stuff about life into the category of acceptance, and that it's not something to run away from insecurities or doubts or any of those, because they are also here with us, and the bad part of life just is life. It's not like, I don't know, it doesn't necessarily need a value statement besides like the kind of projections that we put on it.
Yeah. Just,
it was, I had a lot of thoughts in my mind. So, thank you.
It's just life. Yeah. One of the things that when I first started practicing Zen, I lived in a Zen monastery in New York 20 plus years ago. And I was in the middle of this really intensely angst-ridden time, which was a thing that I did a lot of. That was the way I rolled. And the head monk, I was angsting out at the head monk. And she looked at me and she said, "Josh, it's just your life." And it was the most useless thing anybody had ever said. "What do you mean it's just my life?" And yet, with time, that's really become enormously valuable to me, to be able to meet this as just life arising. It includes this too. These making choices, these making adjustments, taking actions in our life is included as well, not just passiveness. But not because when we take those actions, it's not because life itself is fundamentally flawed. We're just playing freely in the realm of taking action, guided by the wisdom of the precepts, guided by our compassionate heart, guided by our bodhisattva vows.
So, yeah, thank you, Josh. Yeah, so 10 kalpas. I was just really reflecting on your comment early on that not nothing, though. How is that? This not nothing.
Yeah, and this not nothing. You know, it's not what we think it is. It's not what we think it should be. It's not what we thought it would be. But, you know, anybody who comes back a second time to the cushion is really on perhaps a dark to the mind, heart level, connected to there is something real and true here. And so noticing that for yourself, noticing that there is something that on some level does resonate, does sing to your heart.
So, this non-attained Buddha, it's so clear to me that I don't want to feel all this doubt and feel like a jerk, right? And it's easy for me to hear this as, well, so you're filled with doubt and you feel like a jerk and that's it. And that's, you know, that's it. Be filled with doubt and be a jerk. That's exactly it. And this just rises up in me. Oh my God, not this. This isn't what I want at all. And I can really kind of get my head around this entrusting thing, so that, you know, when it shows up as, oh my God, I really don't want this, you know, I can kind of just let myself be in that place of, oh my God, I really don't want this, and this sucks, and I feel like a jerk, and I'm just going to be that way, you know. And I can see the value in that, but nonetheless, I don't want to think that it's never going to be anything but filled with doubt and feeling like a jerk a lot of the time. That I really want to be the new improved Steve, you know.
So, you know, when I hear you say that, Steve, there are layers of this non-attained Buddha, right? And so the layer of, I don't want to be a jerk, is a perfect expression of it. And then the next layer is, but I don't want this to be the only thing there is. And then the next layer is, but I don't want this to happen forever. And you can see how they're all versions of the non-attained Buddha. And one thing that you already know, but I think you forget a lot, is that nothing persists, nothing lasts. You know, even though that sparrow is really slow at getting the mountain to whirl away, and I can't, it couldn't just be one sparrow, but sometimes I feel like the sparrow. You know, like, do it again. Right, but you know that things don't last. And you know that. And yet there's part of your mind that says, no, they do. I'm always going to be like this. But some of us have known you for a long time. And you're not who you were when we first met you. And in another length of another kalpa, you'll be some other version of Steve. The problem is that you probably won't be the one that you're fantasizing. Because that one, just a dream, right?
And another form of just this is it, right? I mean, we can hear just this is it, just this is it, right? Right. That sounds very limiting and tiny and, you know, awful. But another way of hearing that is exactly this is also included. Gives it a little more space.
Yeah. I was struggling Josh, during large portions of the talk, with the returning to the, getting up and realizing, I'm still me. Why am I still me? Because I find that I was pulling away from that because I get up and I'm so deeply attached to me. What that it almost felt alien. Why would I struggle with still being me? God, I love being this. And I think what I this is another question is, I think what I realized was where the truth for me and what you were saying is,
yeah,
is the fear of losing me, mm-hmm, or of changing, really losing.
Mm-hmm.
I think.
Yeah, and what happens if you stop fighting that?
Right. Mm-hmm. There's fear there too.
Right.
Yeah. What would that be like to stop fighting that?
Well, it's almost the mirror image of what Steve brought in. You know, it's not a different yearning. Not a different holding on. It's a different holding on. It's just another flavor.
Mm.
Nice, tasty.
And so, you know, we shouldn't rush to too much of a conclusion that we exactly know who this so-called me is, right? I mean, we use that word and we mean something by it, but if we really look, it isn't this unitary thing that we pretend to each other that it is, and so sometimes what arises is fear, sometimes what arises is aversion, sometimes what arises is stories about the way things might or should or could be. But all of that is just arisings in this vast space that includes maybe not quite exactly me in the way that I am assuming. That too. Thank you, everyone.